The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. If you know me, you know that Kyle Mills has been a guest for many years since he took over the amazing legacy of Vince Flynn. Here's the brand new book, Oath of Loyalty. Kyle Mills is back to talk about Oath of Loyalty. Good morning, Kyle. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
It is great to talk to you again. This time you're bringing out a Vince Flynn book and a Mitch Rapp book in the middle of the election season. So we have to do one segment on the air and not our normal two. But we'll sell this book anyway. It doesn't need much help. I want for people who are new to the show. I just picked up new stations all over the country, especially in Maine and New Hampshire. Would you tell them how you came to become the trustee of the Vince Flynn legacy and how Oath of Loyalty is? I think your eighth Vince Flynn Mitch Rapp book. Am I right?
Yeah, it is. It is the eighth. Well, when Vince passed away, the family thought about, you know, whether they wanted the series to continue and whether fans wanted the series to continue. And I think overwhelmingly, people loved the character. They loved Vince and they wanted to see his legacy live on. So they went out and talked to some authors. And I had been a big fan of Vince's my entire life and had written a lot of my own books. And I got lucky and ended up with the job.
It's a great job, and you're doing it so well. The hardest thing that occurred to me when I was reading Oath of Loyalty is new villains and new challenges. So I want to read from page 234. Rapp nodded. Where Legion is concerned, there are no precautions I consider overkill. We don't understand their capabilities, resources, or operating history. Irene, everyone knows, who's a Mitch Rapp viewer, pretty comfortable attributing four hits to them, but it's almost certain there are more. These aren't people that come at you with guns blazing. They're people who release a shark when you're swimming in the ocean or swap out your blood pressure medication for sugar pills and wait for you to have a stroke. Even with our eyes wide open, there's a good chance we won't see them coming. They're incredible, Sadie said. No pattern at all. Everything they do is bespoke. First time I've seen bespoke in a spy novel. Kyle.
She's British, though.
Yeah, she's pretty bespoke. You know, bespoke means one of a kind. And I wanted to go there. Coming up with villains. Legion is a pretty doggone good villain. How long did that take to think up?
You know, it took a little while, but I really wanted to create a threat for Mitch that an assassin, essentially, that he didn't know if he could handle. But because he's the best at what he does, I had to kind of come up with the anti-Mitch. So Legion works in a completely different way. If they ever shot anybody, they'd consider it just really banal. You know, they would never do something like that. It has to be, no one can ever know that the person was killed.
No, I'm not going to do any spoilers. The hardest thing to do when I talk with Kyle is not to do any spoilers. But the new villain is Legion, but I'm not going to tell you. It's so scriptural. It will resonate with all the Christian people out there. I am Legion. Was that on your mind when you picked up Legion as the name?
It was. I mean, because they work in complete secrecy, it also created a situation in which no one knew if it was one person or many people. And that's one of the reasons I like that name.
Double blind. Would you explain double blind to people?
Yeah, this is something that can work now because of cryptocurrency. They don't know. There's kind of an email you can send your request for a hit to. It's an anonymous email. And they respond, and then you pay them, and then they do the hit. But they never know who hired them, and you never know who you hired. One day the person dies, and that's the end of the transaction.
And then the transaction closes. And it is possible now with crypto and with the dark web. So, Kyle Mills, let's start about with placement. I always talk to my thriller writers about where they begin and where they end. Uganda and South Africa play big roles here. South Africa is familiar to Mitch Rapp readers. Why Uganda? Why are we in Uganda at the beginning?
This is where one of the characters lives. And I like the idea of it because it's really off the map in a sense of if you really wanted to get away from everything and get away from any threats to you, that's a nice place to be because there aren't very many agencies that have a lot of capability there. It's a little more chaotic. The other thing you have to think about now when I'm writing is cameras. You know, it's extremely difficult to operate somewhere like London or Beijing or, you know, many countries, Saudi Arabia, that you're not constantly on camera and being analyzed by AI.
Yeah. And what's interesting is when Mitch goes back to his house for the first time, he doesn't even trust his own personal network security, even if it's built into the walls. He has to have a bunco hole. He's got to be able to get away from his own house, even though he's built Fortress Mitch Rapp. But that is, I think, a good caution to everyone. Did you talk to security experts about this?
Oh, yeah. All the time. Yeah. It's hard to keep up with because the technology just moves. I'm almost monthly on the capabilities of it.
You know, I was up in Jackson Hole 2-3 weeks ago, and the Republicans were gathered there. And I know you live there. And I was thinking the Federal Reserve comes to the same place every year. That's not really smart, right? It just isn't smart. And I started thinking about that. Someone's going to join the staff of one of these resorts someday, and they're just going to be waiting for the Federal Reserve. Nobody should do the same thing ever again, right?
It is. Yeah, it's absolutely true. And Jackson Hole has no security at all. So I don't know. But it's a nice place to be. So I guess that's where they picked it.
Do you stay there in the winter, by the way?
Yeah, mostly. I spend ideally a winter or an entire year here and an entire year in Spain. So I like the winter here because I've always been a skier.
Oh, then that answers one of my questions. How did you know that Girona is the cycling capital of the world? I just figured it out because you live in Spain.
Yeah, and I'm a big cyclist, so I've spent a lot of time there.
Now, why do all the cyclists go to Spain? There's no elevation rise. They can't get what they need, can they?
Oh, no, actually, there are quite a few mountains in Spain. So, Girona is very hilly.
Yeah, I remember
a lot of roads. There are a lot of roads and nobody drives on them. So
that's the other. In Colorado, you will drive by cyclists coming up some 14,000-foot mountain, and there's nobody on it. You can see them coming. They're wearing their bright colors. So that's it. You're a cyclist. Do you still go distance?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I ride quite a bit still, like 3 or 4 times a week. So, yeah.
There's an interesting aside. I'm pulling this out of my memory. I hope I get this right. One of Mitch's adversaries doesn't work out well, and they have to run away from Mitch up a mountain. And the guy turned in aerobic activity for weightlifting. Not a good choice. I think you're sending a message there, Kyle.
That's right. That's right. As I get older, I can't lift too many weights anymore. So the bicycle's a perfect thing to be.
Kyle Mills, let's go back to one of the most interesting things in the book, and it's the president of the United States. Now, every thriller writer has to deal with a president, has to deal with the CIA, and has to deal with something in between. That's the premise, that government is government. I don't think I've ever found quite as bad a president as President Cook. Do you think there's as bad? Has Mitch Rapp ever had to work for a president as bad as President Cook?
No, and this is kind of the point of this book, and it started with the prior book, Enemy of Gates. So Mitch has always had the president that liked and admired him. He's done a ton for the United States. They're grateful. So they listen to him and, you know, he can go along his way. They are always behind him. So I'm always trying to give Mitch a new challenge, and the idea of him having a president that can't stand him, I thought would be something interesting for him to handle because it's not his normal, you know, adversary.
And a first lady who is interesting, both a break but an ineffective one, and a CIA director. Irene Kennedy, this is my only spoiler. Irene Kennedy will not be CIA director long in this book. It's not much of a spoiler because it doesn't take but 10 pages to get there. So an adverse president, an adverse CIA, it's kind of novel among the novels I've read.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I thought it would be interesting to see what he would do kind of out in the cold. You think about just as a personal growth. I mean, that sounds a little hippie, but characters have to have arcs. They have to change over time or they become really boring. So what does Mitch do when everything he's lived for is kind of taken away from him almost overnight? You know, he has to, I mean, they, like, literally sitting around thinking, should I take up golf? You know, I mean, it doesn't really have anything to do. So I thought that would be an interesting thing to, for him to think about and grapple with.
It works. New villain and a twist at the top. Two twists at the top. You go from an ally to an enemy. You go from a CIA director who's got your back to one who wants to put a target on your back. And then you've got an excellent Mitch Rapp novel. Talk to us a little bit about the release date. This is a little technical for this is the extended interview. We're off the air now. I'm curious about the release date. Normally, thrillers release in the summer. This is releasing in the middle of a campaign. Now, the good news is everybody is flying everywhere and they need something to read. And it's going to be an airport book. So that makes sense. But with the publisher thinking, okay, everybody's flying everywhere and they need something to read and all the summer thrillers are behind them. What was the thinking here?
No, it's honestly much simpler than that. It's always released at this time. So it's always going to be early to mid-September. So
I've never noticed that.
That's the whole thinking. Yeah, that's the whole thinking. And, you know, it does. It is really affected, certainly when, you know, during the presidential campaign, you know, nobody was thinking about books.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the good news, bad news. But it's also not a bad time. Because a lot of the big summer thrillers are gone.
They're all gone.
You know, they think about that. With where you get on the Times list.
There are four people I talked to. Kyle, I talked to Chuck Box, I talked to Dan Sylvan, I talked to Brad Thor, and you're the last of the four this year. But I thought that was unique. But you're telling me that you've been in that groove for 8 years.
Yeah, and my assumption is Vince was too, but I'm not totally sure of that because it took me a long time to write the first book. So I had to go back and read all the books, you know. Again.
You know, Dwayne will look it up. We were with Vince when he got the news from the Mayo Clinic that was not so good. He was in the studio and had done a long interview with me about the, I think, a fourth Mitch Rapp book. How many total Mitch Rapp books are there now?
This one will be 21.
21?
I'm writing the 22nd now, yeah.
And so generally, no one ever has an age on their hero or anti-hero. No one ever puts a number on it. Danny Silva is the most elusive guy in the world about how old Gabriel Alon is. How old is Mitch Rapp?
You know, I calculated that very, very carefully while I was reading the books, and the math worked out that when I took it over, he was 44.
You know what?
53. It's actually super easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he graduated from college at the exact same time I did during Pan Am 103. So...
And I was talking with Mrs. Hewitt. You can stay very, very – Tom Cruise is 60 and he's in Top Gun. Brad Pitt is the same rough area and he just did Bullet Train. So if those guys can keep doing acting, Mitch can keep being a superhero in the field. And not a superhero. It's all very plausible. Let me talk to you about your book tours now, Kyle. When you go out there, how much do you have to talk about Oath of Loyalty, Oath of Loyalty, Oath of Loyalty? And how much do people want to talk about Mitch Rapp over 20 years?
Oh, you know, it's very general. You know, I talk a little bit about the book, but people are interested in Mitch's arc. You know, a lot of people ask questions about his past. You know, I know for big fans, they'll know that, for instance, American Assassin and Killshot were about his youth and left a lot of things hanging. A lot of people want to talk about that. So it's really fun because, you know, after so many years, the character feels very real to people. You know, they remember his past, his girlfriends, his, you know, all this stuff. And it's fun to sit around and chat about it.
There are touch points in Oath of Loyalty. Stan Hurley has to show up. Stan Hurley does. There's a Stan Hurley reference, right? Is that, do you begin with a checklist of things that you've just got to do in the course of building a completely new plot with a completely new circumstances and many twists? You nevertheless have to do an homage to Stan.
Not really. I don't think it's conscious. It's just that he was such a big part of Mitch's life and Irene's life that, I mean, he trained Mitch that it just sort of pops into my head when I'm writing. But I wouldn't know. I definitely don't have a checklist.
I'm not going to tell anyone about Legion. It's so well thought out. I mean, the whole backstory. But I mean, I don't want to give anyone a clue because it's just perfect. But I do want to go back to Irene drinking wine at the beginning. That's not much of a spoiler because it's 10 pages in. So I don't think I've ever seen that either. Irene tipsy.
No, she it never happens. Never happens. But I felt like this was a moment, if she ever was going to, that was it.
It's perfect. And so my hat is off to you. Let me close by asking you about book tours. Kyle, I don't know if they're back after COVID. It's the first Mishrap book post-COVID. What do you do to promote Oath of Loyalty?
Yeah, I'm going to go out a little bit to BoucherCon in Minneapolis. So, you know, going back to Vince's hometown. And I'll go to Phoenix, to Poison Pen, and also to Indianapolis to something. But it's not as extensive as it has been, but I think it's coming back for sure.
Yeah, no tattered cover. I was wondering, there are some old Reliables, Book Soup, tattered cover, where they continue to do this sort of thing. The Barnes & Noble stuff is over, but I think buyers of books would love to touch base with Kyle Mills again. I just think people want to go back to what was there 3 years ago, and I'll be fascinated to find out if that's the... I think there'll be a lot of people for the talk. And how, do you do a reading or do you do a talk?
No, I just do a talk. I don't think anybody wants to hear me read. George Goodall, the reader, is so good. I would never do it.
And it's a very tough talk because you can't give away a plot point, can you?
No, it is. It's kind of interesting because you that's, I think, partially why people like to talk about the past and stuff. Nobody wants to, you know, wants a bunch of spoilers when they're just buying the book that day.
Very last question. Does anyone get hushed or shouted down when they start to say, I want to talk about Legion, and they go a little bit further than I did?
Yes, that would probably I would because some people show up if they've gotten the advanced reader edition too. Yeah. So, you know, some people out there have read the entire book already and they want to talk about it. So we do that later.
You know, my discipline is to go 4/5 of the book through, but not to finish, because I never, ever want to give away the MacGuffin. Now I can finish Oath of Loyalty. Kyle Mills, thank you so much for joining me. Congratulations on the 8th Mishrap Vince Flynn book that you've done. I can't imagine that Vince would be other than superbly happy with your choices and your work. Thank you for joining me, friend.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, everyone. This is Dwayne Patterson, producer of The Hugh Hewitt Show. I've known for a while now that there's been far too much of me here in the studio, and I finally needed to do something about my weight. My excuse was always that I couldn't follow a plan with the crazy schedule that I keep. I heard about PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition and how they customize their program for each client, and I decided to call. This was no problem for Rachel and the PhD team. They had me map out what my day looks like and created a plan to follow. And so far, I've lost 16 pounds already, and I'm just 2 weeks in, on the way to my goal of losing 45. Call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition at 864-644-1900 and make your appointment for your consultation. The plan is simple. It's based on science and nutrition. There's no pills or injections, and they even include 80% of your food if you want it. Call them right now at 864-644-1900 or find them online at myphdweightloss.com and tell them you heard about it from Dwayne, the producer Hugh actually has on The Hugh Hewitt Show.
Talk about Senator Rick Scott joins me as chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee. Good morning, Senator Scott. How are you?
Yeah, to you, it's going to be interesting today. A lot of money's been spent the last 2 weeks in New Hampshire. But here's what I know. Maggie Hazen, her problem, people know her in New Hampshire, and they don't like her. There's, she spent, I think, personally, I mean, her campaign, $9 million, and her favorables is still in the low 40s, and Biden's numbers are bad. So, yeah, whoever gets out of that primary, I think we have a great shot. I think we're going to win. I think we're going to win New Hampshire, actually.
Now, let's run down the map. I want to start with the seats like New Hampshire held by a Democrat, and we'll come back to that next time you're on, talk about New Hampshire and who the nominee is. Georgia, Herschel has surged ahead of Raphael Warnock in a couple of polls.
He's running a great race. Here's what's happened. Two things have happened. One, Herschel's taken the offense. He's got a great communications person. He's taken the offense. He's leading generally the polls now by 3 points. We've defined Warnock. We started early, and we defined him. Remember, he got through the general election in November 2020 with 2-1 fave-unfave. That's not where he is now. He's basically 44-44 on fave-unfave. We're going to win in Georgia. Herschel's running a great race.
He is. He's just a likable guy. And as a caller said to me, we've known Herschel for 40 years in Georgia, and we like him. And that matters.
Yeah, he's a good
now,
guy.
I want to compliment you on candidate recruitment, Senator Scott, because Joe O'Day is America's candidate. I'd have him on every day if I was later in the
that
day there.
Great.
He's a great candidate. What do you feel about Colorado?
I think we got a great shot. The last poll I saw has him down 1. And here's why we're going to win in Colorado. One, Bennett is not well thought of. His numbers, he's like about 44% approval. So that's not good. Number two is Biden's numbers are under 40 in what, you know, people always think, oh, Colorado's all blue. Well, they don't like Biden, and they're not enamored with Bennett. O'Day's running a great race. So he's got a great background. His wife has done some great ads in Spanish to help him. I think he's going to win like I do the Hispanic vote. I think it's going to be the game changer. The Hispanic vote is going to be the reason we win in Colorado.
And in Arizona as well. Let me play for you Senator Mark Kelly, asked by a local Arizona TV anchor yesterday, because he won't do any national media, about grading Joe Biden. How is he doing? Here is that exchange, cut number 10.
Your thoughts on his job. Has he done a good job, do you think?
Hey, first of all, it's not my job to give him a report card.
Okay, it is his job to give him a report card. What did you think of that, Senator Scott?
Well, no, they don't want to be close to Joe Biden. He's toxic. I mean, I think his approval rating in Arizona is something like 34%. So he doesn't want to be close. But by the way, Kelly is a liar. The guy sits there and acts like he's an independent when he goes to Arizona. When he comes up here, Chuck Schumer says jump, but he says how high. He votes 100% of the time, but Chuck Schumer has voted against border security three times. He's done nothing to stop this fentanyl problem, done nothing to stop this inflation. I mean, Mark Kelly is a complete liar. In contrast, Blake Masher is a great individual. He's a business guy. He's working his butt off. You saw Heritage Action raised $5 million. They're in that race now to help make sure we continue to find Kelly. So what we did with Kelly, we did the exact same thing. We started defining him last year. His approval ratings are under 50%. So, I think Blake Masher is going to win.
I do, too. Now, I think the mortal lock, though, is Nevada. Adam Laxalt has been my friend for a decade. He should have been the governor. He was a great attorney general. I think he's going to be the next senator. And here you have another candidate who knows the state intimately well. And Cortez Masto is simply the invisible senator along with Bennett. They are the twin invisible senators. And Cortez Masto, it's just not a good candidate.
Yeah. Well, she's not a hard worker. No one knows what she's done. Biden's numbers are in the 30s. Her numbers are way under 50. And by the way, Adam Laxalt is a hard worker. He knows the state. He was a successful attorney general. He's going to do really well with the Hispanic vote, which I think is something like 23 or 24% of the vote.
Yes.
Hispanics are fed up with Democrats. They're fed up with Joe Biden. They don't like Joe Biden. They're fed up with him. They don't like what the Democrats have done with the public school system. So I think Adam Laxalt's going to we've got so many opportunities because what we did, we defined the Democrats early, and we got great candidates.
Yeah. Now, I want to go to the long shot, Tiffany Smiley. Washington State votes by mail. She's fantastic. She's a military spouse. She's got a heroic story. She's inspiring. But they vote by mail. I just don't know how to poll Washington State, Senator. What do you think about Tiffany Smiley?
Man, she's got a story, doesn't she?
Yes.
Brought her husband back to health, blinded. She was a young nurse. Her husband was blinded in Iraq, serving in the Army, brought him back to health. He served 20 years. I think the first, maybe the only blind officer served 20 years in the Army. Three kids. She's got a great story. And Patty Murray is not well-liked. Her favorables are way under 50. We've spent a lot of, we've all spent a lot of money making sure people know who she is. Patty Murray is not well-liked. So it's a hard state, but I'll tell you what, if the person that can win is Tiffany Smiley. So what I tell everybody, we've got to help all of our candidates. You can help us. You can text WIN to 55404 at the NRSC, but help our candidates. They all need more resources. The Democrats have outraised us, but I'm very optimistic about this fall.
So you can text WIN to 55404. Did I get that right, Senator?
Yep, WIN 55404. We'll get you the information. If you have any way to get it, if you want any information on how to get it to a candidate, we'll get you that information. I'm excited. Great candidates. Biden's numbers are horrible. Democrats keep voting with Biden.
Let me run down the Republican races. Eric Schmidt's going to win in Missouri. We avoided a nightmare. He's going to win.
Right.
Let's pause on that. Now, the rule of the Hugh Hewitt Show is Tim Ryan is a personal friend, so I don't attack Tim, but I can talk up JD all I want. And J.D. is going to win. Ohio's a red state. J.D. Embodies Ohio. Former President Trump's going to be with him in Mahoney Valley.
Movie about the guy.
Yeah, I know. He's going to be a fun senator. He's very fun. And he's a Marine. So he's going to win. Talk to me about Ron Johnson. I feel much better. Ron has been on the show 2 weeks in a row. What do you think?
Ron's slightly ahead in the polls. He's had tough races on 10 and 16. He pulls it out because he's the hardest working guy in Wisconsin. Barnes is a radical leftist. And so we're defining Barnes. We've been helping Ron since we started spending money in the spring. And Ron is running a great race, raising his money. He's going to win.
Now let's conclude on Pennsylvania. Let's talk about Dr. Oz and Fetterman, because Carl Rove on the show last week said that Mandela
great.
Barnes.
I mean, wonderful family. First off, Oz is great. He listens to you. He's working hard. I talk to him every few days. He's going somewhere, just left somewhere. He's talking to everybody he can. He told me a couple of days ago, Senator John Kennedy came up to him. They had 1,200 people at a rally. That's a big deal. They were defining Fetterman. We've cut Fetterman's lead in half. So as long as we define Fetterman, Oz is going to win. He's a hard worker.
On that point, last week, Carl Rove and I disagreed because I think Fetterman is the most radical candidate running. And Carl thought that Mandela Barnes in Wisconsin is more radical. You get to break the tie.
They're both horrible.
But who's even loonier than the other one? Because these guys are from central casting left wing.
You know what I think about Fetterman? It's exactly, if you've made any money, you don't want your kids to turn out like that.
That's so true.
He's never done anything.
And the whole hoodie thing and the tats on the arms and the look, I feel bad for the guy. He's had a stroke.
Yeah, he wants to release a third of people out of prison and legalize all drugs. And we look at the crime wave we already have, and he wants to make it worse.
So at the bottom of the hour, we're going to get the inflation numbers, and I think we're going to have double-digit food prices increase. Does gas coming down offset the fact that groceries are going up, Rick Scott?
No. Think about it. It's a cumulative problem. So I think in Florida, as an example, even without this month's numbers, since Biden got elected, it's 14% inflation. And food prices are not coming down. We've got potential of a rail strike because the Biden administration can't figure out how to work with unions. They're the most pro-union people, but they can't figure out how to work with them. And the unions are sitting there saying, hey, look, what you've done to my inflation. I've got to give a raise. That's what everybody's saying. I mean, Biden's killing the poorest families in this country with his inflation and his border crisis. Crime wave, all this stuff. It's crazy.
It's inflation, it's crime, it's the border. Those are the big three. Senator Rick Scott, keep coming back. I appreciate the work you've done for the NRC throughout the year. It's text the number, text 55404. That's the number. But use the word win, W-I-N, to 55404. 55404, the word win, and you can help the NRSC. Rick Scott, thank you for joining me, Senator. Always a pleasure. Don't go anywhere, America. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Affordability and inflation, crime in our cities, the border crisis, higher taxes. These are all the concerns we face going into the midterm election. Learn who is on the right side of those issues. Join me for the Battleground Talkers Tour this October. Visit battlegroundtour.com for dates, locations, and tickets. Battlegroundtour.com for all the detail. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Hey, Senator Tom Cotton joins us. Good morning, Senator Cotton.
Good morning, Hugh. It's good to be back on with you. Glad to hear that you've played some classic rock this morning as buffer music and not the endless loop of the Browns' last-minute kick over the Panthers. I had enough of that yesterday.
Senator Cotton, I want to compliment you on the American Workforce Act, but I'm going to come back to it. I also want to compliment you as being the first person on the Hugh Hewitt Show to say that the Ukrainian war will prove that infantry remains indispensable. Your thoughts on the Ukraine advance, as well as, please, whether or not we ought to do what Nixon did in 73 with Israel, send everything that can fly to the Ukrainians and resupply.
Well, it's certainly been a lightning advance in northeast Ukraine over the last 4 or 5 days. I went back and read some news reporting, and as late as Thursday night, Hugh, most Western news sources were still focused on the southern offensive around Kherson, just north of Crimea. So the Ukrainian armed forces did an outstanding job of achieving tactical surprise. And through combined arms maneuver warfare, infantry, armor, artillery, as well as effective use of some airstrikes, they've been able to seize territory. I think now we're up to almost the size of Connecticut that they've reclaimed of their own land in northeastern Ukraine. And critically, they've seized some logistics hubs, places like Izium, that were not just important in their own right, but for the supply lines they provided to Russian troops throughout eastern Ukraine. And I think it just goes to show that the policy of equipping Ukraine to defend itself and to fight its own war has been succeeding. I wish the Biden administration had started it before this war began. It might have forestalled the war from happening in the first place or shortened it from the very beginning. But as you alluded to, what Nixon did in 1973, we need to keep the supply lines flowing to Ukraine so they can continue to defend their own territory, which, as we've seen, they're not only willing to do, but they are more than able to do.
Now, Senator Cotton, I'm reminded, of course, of the Battle of the Bulge, where Germans rallied to push the American troops back in December of 1944 around the Ardennes. Are you worried that Ukraine will become overextended at this point and be susceptible to the Russian counterattack of their counterattack?
It's always possible. And even when we're lauding the Ukrainians for these gains in the last 4 or 5 days, we should remember 4 or 5 days is not make a war. There are ebbs and flows. But at this point, it looks like the Ukrainian general staff, down through privates on the front lines, are working in a fairly methodical way to solidify those ground lines and make sure that they're not overextended in that fashion. And again, we're talking about significant areas, amounts of terrain, you know, something almost the size of Connecticut, but we're not talking about something, you know, the size of the Western Front in World War II. So I think the Ukrainians will, before the winter freeze begins to set in, be able to not only to extend their gains further, but also consolidate them.
Now, the silver medalist columnist at the Washington Post, second best columnist at the Washington Post, Henry Olson, he's actually tied for, there are two people on the silver platform, Mark Thiessen and Henry Olson. He wrote a column yesterday that surprised me. I was unaware of Tom Cotton's American Workforce Act. I'm feeling a little bit, you know, a little bit second-class citizen here, because you come on here every week and you haven't mentioned the American Workforce Act to me. But a good idea whose time has come, the last line of Henry's column is, Cotton's American Workforce Act is an idea that's time has come. Let's hope other Republicans see the light. And indeed, it is compelling. Tell people what it is.
Well, one reason you may not have heard about it is that we introduced it last week, I think on Thursday to be exact. And the news of Her Majesty's death on Thursday ground down a little bit what was happening in the United States Senate. But the bill is designed to provide similar kinds of public support for America's workers who are not going to go get a 4-year degree, maybe not even get a 2-year degree, and they don't need one to lead successful, prosperous lives and contribute meaningfully in their local economy. So it would create a new program that would give a kind of federal voucher up to $9,000 for prospective workers who can go and get training on the job in the workforce for the skills in their local economy. So in South Arkansas, for instance, it might be in the oil fields, or it might be in timber mills. In Northeast Arkansas, it might be at one of our big steel mills. And it's going to be employer-driven, so it's obviously going to be directly relevant and useful. And then it'll allow also those employers to gain some public support for creating these programs that, again, would be for the high-paying jobs they have, almost as much as median income in the region. And then if they hire them, they'll have incentives to keep them on and hire them as the training cycle comes to a conclusion. And it shouldn't add anything to the deficits that we've been running, one way that we would be funding it is through a 1% tax on the fair market value of these huge endowments that colleges have been running up for decades, billions and billions of dollars. I think it's past time that we begin to support all the young men and women across America who aren't interested in college. They don't need the skills that college teach to succeed, but they do need help in the same way that we help kids go to college. We should help kids get this kind of critical skills education for their local economy in the workforce.
I hope that the 1% tax on endowment, and I think that's a fine idea, excludes all institutions that have rejected federal money for decade after decade, like Grove City and, of course, Hillsdale, because the people who are part of the problem here are Harvard. Your and my alma mater has got $40 billion of endowment, and a 1% a year ticket is a great idea, by the way. Let me go back and ask. I immediately thought of my son James's buddy from high school who got his high school diploma and promptly went off to the BMW training center in God knows where on the Canadian border. I mean, it was way up there. And you 6 months learning how to BMW mechanic, and the young man loved cars and he loved BMW. So he's still working away 15 years later, and he's making a good wage. But it costs money to go to the BMW Academy. Would it cover something like that?
Yeah, that's the kind of thing it's designed to cover to you is workers who have, you know, maybe a specific job in mind, maybe in a specific employer in mind. Helps defray the cost of that employer training those potential workers who don't have the skills necessary to engage in what is often high-tech, highly skilled work, even if you don't need 4 years, you know, of general education at a four-year college to get it. So it would both defray the cost on the front end and then also give employers incentives to then hire those people into their full-time workforce on the back end.
This is also a national security thing. I can hear Captain Jerry Hendricks, the naval strategist, and Captain Mark Vandroff, who is our friend who is running the Constellation shipyard up in Green Bay, saying shipyard workers, skilled electricians, people who can build boats and ships, it would actually help remedy a critical shortage in skills-based defense suppliers.
Yeah, it would, Hugh. And you know, again, it's also heavily localized too, because it's tied to your local workforce. I mean, we do need many more employees in our shipbuilding industry. Not going to be a big source of jobs in Arkansas, I'm afraid. However, there's been some recent news coverage of the Highland Industrial Park down in South Arkansas in Camden, where so many of the missiles and rockets or their components that are being used by Ukraine's army right now have been built. One challenge that they've had in Camden though for years are getting those skilled workers. And again, this is the kind of program that would allow workers in South Arkansas to take this voucher and go to, say, Lockheed Martin or go to Raytheon and learn those skills while the employer is defraying the cost. And then they get hired full time where they have a job that might pay two or three times what the average income is in South Arkansas that is in high demand and that is going to give them a great chance for success in life.
My last question, I could bring up Arkansas State and Ohio State, but I'm a gentleman, so I won't. I want to know where the American Workforce Act idea came from, because one of the problems in D.C. is unless an idea has been on the shelf for 25 years, it doesn't move quickly. Who came up with this? Who did you talk about with it? What economists did you bring in? I mean, where did the idea come from?
Well, Hugh, it's been something that's on my mind for a while. You know, four-year degrees are good for a lot of young kids. You got one, I got one, a lot of our listeners did. But for many kids, probably more kids, it's not the right thing. And I've seen how much federal spending is directed towards those institutions, often without increasing job prospects and just contributing to more inflation in colleges and universities. And it's been a desire of mine to try to find a way to direct more of that money towards the kinds of job skills that our young Americans need. We worked with an organization called American Compass. You know, it's not, as you say, it's something that's been around for 25 or 75 years. They've got a lot of good creative scholars there, and they helped us craft this bill in conjunction with some of my great staff. And like I said, I think it's going to be something that, if we implement it, will contribute a lot to all the Americans who don't want to go to college or for whom college might not be the right fit.
This is an unqualified great idea. I congratulate you. Got co-sponsors yet, Senator Cotton?
Still working on that, Hugh. It may be a while to condition the senators in both parties to think something beyond more money for four-year colleges, which in the end probably is going to be more inflation. But this is the kind of bill that I think would be broadly popular across the country once people realize what it can mean for them and for their future.
This is a very, very good idea, and Republicans ought to rally around it, as should Democrats. Senator Tom Cotton, thank you for joining me. Sorry about Arkansas State, but you really don't want to mess with the Buckeyes in football season, Senator.
Well, I appreciate your condolences, Hugh. I'm sure they're heartfelt.
Thank you, Senator.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.